Well, hi there. Fast am I or more am I, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. I'm Siobhan Fletcher, and this is the latest edition of A Day in the Life Of. And today, I didn't go very far to find my next guest. I basically walked across the corridor in the Manx Radio building and cornered Ben Hartley one day and asked him to get involved. This is a special edition of the podcast because we're marking World Radio Day. Now, World Radio Day was proclaimed back in 2011 by UNESCO and was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 2012, and it's marked every year on the 13th of February. So what better time to speak to Ben about why he got into radio, why he still loves Manx radio, and why he's a Peel boy through and through. The majority of this conversation was actually recorded a little while ago between myself, Ben, and Lewis Foster from the newsroom, with a little bit of an update because since we recorded the original conversation, our schedule changed and Ben now gets out of bed even earlier. So there is a little bit of a newer part dropped in here as well. I really hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
My name is Ben Hartley and I am the Manx Radio Breakfast presenter and I'm also a producer here at the radio station.
And what made you get into that then?
It goes back years, many, many years now. And I think I've always had this fascination about communication, and it started when it used to be Sport on 2, what is now Sport on Radio 5, used to be Radio 2, and in the 80s when I was a big listener to that as a youngster, I was fascinated by the sports commentaries and the sports results when they used to run down the classified scores on sports reports. And then afterwards, I would produce my own little sports bulletins. I'd sit there with the fixtures in front of me, cut out from the paper, write all the scores down. And then on an old cassette recorder with a little old microphone attached to it, I'd read out the scores. And then I went on to do my own little news bulletins when I was about 8 or 9 and all the other youngsters were out at the park playing football. I was the slightly sad one in my bedroom with the aforementioned cassette recorder, making up my own little news bulletins. And it was often about what had happened that day at school. So for example, the headlines would be, oh, so and so was late for school and somebody's been playing golf over at the park when they shouldn't be, and all that kind of thing. And literally that is where it started at about 8 or 9 years of age.
I love this. Now, you are a Man U fan as well. Yeah. Were you ever biased in those sports bulletins?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I think I was straight down the line. I think even from a young age I knew all about balance and unbiased reporting.
He knew his media training from the womb.
I mean, those were the days when United didn't win very much either. The late 80s, they were just kind of on the rise from the doldrums. So
So how long did that period last from going to, from making your own bulletins to sort of, I suppose, pre-adulthood and getting your own car as well and having more access to the radio?
Yeah, I suppose the next step from there was a few years later, school work experience came around, and by this point I'd started listening a lot to Manx Radio and I thought, I just really want to be in that building. It was like this place on Douglas Head was like this magical building for me. I'd look up from the bus station on Lord Street and think, I want to be in there. I want to be on the radio. It
was who was on the radio at that time?
I mean, these were the great days of, like, you know, Stu Lowe doing breakfast, Susie Blesser doing their mid-mornings and Swap Shop. We had Bernie on The Late Show, David Collister doing The Man in Line. George was here and others as well. You know, the sort of great Manx radio presenters who I learned an awful lot from once I got here. But yeah, schoolwork experience came round and the radio station didn't offer a placement. So I got in touch and they very kindly said you can come up for a week, which I did. This was 1994. It's nearly 30 years ago now. And I loved it so much. When I went on to my second week of work experience elsewhere, it was an office job. I was just wanting to be back up here the whole time. And very kindly, it led on from there. I sort of said, look, I really loved it. Can I come back and do anything? And they said, well, do you want to come in on a Friday evening after school and make the tea, put the CDs away? That shows how long ago we're talking about. You know, file the cassettes and the mini discs. And I did. And it just led on from there until I was offered a placement and then a full-time job once I finished school.
So does it still have that kind of, do you come up to work and do you have that little bit of wonder still in the back of your mind of, God, I really like wanted to be up here when I was younger and now this is my day to day?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's an element of it's work now, isn't it? That's the thing. It's the day to day sort of, you know, 9 to 5 job or 6 till 2 as it is for us when we're on early shifts. So there is that element. But yeah, I always try and remember that. Actually, this is And it's not at all easy to forget. You know, it's very much ingrained in me that this is something I always wanted to do right from that very young age. And now I'm lucky enough to be doing on a daily basis.
And it's not always been Manx Radio, has it? There was a period where you went across to England and had some jobs over there.
Yeah, that's right. When I was here first time around, I was here for about 6 years from leaving school until I was about 23, 24. And I suppose like many young people, you know, the bright lights of London were beckoning. My brother was living down there then, he still is. I used to go and visit him. And there was a real pull to London, and I was really into the theatre as well, even more so in those days. So there was the pull of all the shows, the West End, and just that, I suppose, that thing of wanting to go away and try something away from the comfort of the island. I'd been involved with Manx Radio for a number of years by this point, and it was that thing of, oh, can I spread my wings? And to be honest, what I really wanted to do was to sit on the BBC breakfast sofa and present from the red sofa. It never happened, but it was always like that great ambition. So, yeah, was in London for 6 years and worked at a few stations there. Time FM, a commercial station in southeast London, which is no longer there. Did a few traffic and travel shifts for LBC and Heart, which was great fun, being in a really busy London newsroom. But the vast majority of the time, I was based at Guildford, at what was BBC Southern Counties Radio, and became BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, and did travel presenting there, reporter shifts, going out and about reporting into the breakfast show, and presented the early breakfast show for a couple of years. So early starts are a fairly familiar thing.
So I do have a question for you though, but one thing I do want to know is, have you ever actually been on a tour or anything of the BBC and sat on the red couch, or is it still a dream?
I have sat.
You've sat on it.
We've been to Media City in
Salford.
I've
done the same.
Yeah,
I nerdily sort of asked someone to take my picture for me.
Which incarnation as well? Because there's been several, I believe.
Well, of course, there's been that big hunt. John Kay has been doing this for the 40th anniversary of Breakfast to find the original sofa, and I think only one little bit of it still exists. I think it may have been replaced since I was there. It was about 6 or 7 years ago, because it was looking a bit frayed around the edges when I sat on it. Obviously, it gets a lot of hammer every day with lots of different people sitting on it, but yeah, the dream was realised. Trip to Media City, and of course they use the studio for Northwest Tonight as well, so I sat with Roger Johnson.
Now, do you have the same little bit of, like, I don't know, I feel like growing up being interested in being a journalist, I get weirdly starstruck by when I meet journalists like that. So I did some work experience in Northwest Tonight, and yeah, meeting Roger Johnson and Annabelle Tiffin, and at the time Wynne Evans was still doing the weather, and I was like, oh, you look like one who does the weather. And you meet these kind of heroes, which weirdly they're just doing local news, but you kind of grow up watching them. Do you get a bit starstruck when you meet people like Roger Johnson?
Without a doubt, because Northwest Tonight, it's a real institution. I think out of all the BBC regional programmes in the evening, I think Northwest Tonight has a huge viewer loyalty. And that was another thing. When I was doing these sports reports as a kid, I was watching Northwest Tonight in the days of John Mundy and Winifred Robinson and Kathy Smith and people like that, and thinking, oh yeah, I want to do that as well. So yeah, there was no doubt about it, to be in the studio with Roger, who is a fantastic journalist and presenter, and also got to spend some time with the late Diane Oxbury, who was just incredible at what she did, to see her sort of prep for the weather and then just come in and deliver it in that brilliant way she used to do. It was, a real thrill. And yeah, no doubt about it, I am definitely starstruck.
It's weird that you say about being starstruck, because I have no idea who any of those people you just mentioned, but if you mentioned Peter Levy from BBC Look North, I might have the same kind of reaction. But again, goes to show kind of the what locality can do, and how we become kind of ingrained, and how we may not realise that we're part of a certain community, but actually we are. And I've found that, I think we've discussed Manx Radio before, it has that pull for the island as well, and the presenters and everyone here.
Without a doubt, you know, I think local news, whether it be on the TV or whether it be local radio, and perhaps we have the ability to really get even more local than the TV does, because of the fact that radio is just so instant. If something's happening in Douglas, we can be down there within a few minutes. With the technology now, we can broadcast in quality from our phone and literally be on the scene in a couple of minutes. And it's just that importance of local radio. That's what we do. And, you know, Manx Radio has its critics, and sometimes rightly so. We don't always get it right, and hopefully we hold our hands up when we don't and admit our mistakes. But, you know, I think we do a really good job and serve the island and have done for 60 years. And just that importance of, you know, look at when we had the COVID lockdowns, you know, so many people turned to Manx Radio because we were the only media outlet streaming the COVID media briefings from the government in the old-fashioned analogue way on the radio. Lots of outlets were doing it on Facebook or whatever, but you needed an internet connection for that, you know, and if that wasn't working or you didn't have the internet, you know, we still provided that old-fashioned contact. And a snow day is a great example of Manx Radio coming into its own, or any bad weather day, as we've all seen in the last couple of months. You know, everybody, I think, still turns to Manx Radio for a snow day, even though there's so many ways to get all that crucial information now. I think people still like to hear it sort of from the horse's mouth, as it were, somebody giving you that information of the schools. Shut, are they open? Is the mountain road closed because of the snow? What's happening at the airport? I still think we play a really, really crucial role, and long, long may local radio wherever continue.
I will say that when I first moved over to the island and I was working elsewhere, I tuned in for one of these COVID briefings, and I was just set up and told to ask a question at the briefing, and no one thought to tell me that it was being like broadcast on the radio. So I had no idea, and I just did this briefing, and I remember that someone on the government side like muted my mic on Zoom by accident, so I was sort of just speaking to nothing, and it was so embarrassing.
Oh, yeah,
and then I came
that.
Out and found I know and then I came out and found out that it had gone out on the radio, and I was thinking, oh no.
Yeah, and it was a big thing because everybody was, particularly in the early days of COVID, that first lockdown, everybody was tuning in. We all remember 4 o'clock, you know, Howard o'clock, and all the rest of it. But it was really very old fashioned, almost like those wartime days where everybody gathered round the radio to listen, because we certainly in our generation hadn't seen anything or lived through anything like that. So again, it just goes to show the importance and that power of local radio. And I remember you on that first day thinking, who's this new girl at the papers?
Oh, no,
I might have preferred not knowing I was on the radio, because I was cutting my teeth here at Manx Radio at that time. And I think, yeah, probably doing my first media briefings about a month after starting
that,
on the
same
bulletins.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it, obviously for me and Siobhan, that was our introduction almost to radio. But for you, what did the COVID period feel like in comparison to everything else that you've been through with radio since starting?
Absolutely like nothing else. It was a really strange time. I mean, for all of us, for all the obvious reasons, it was quite scary to begin with. I remember the day before the first COVID press briefing they did, the one where they announced TT wasn't going to be happening and the first measures that were introduced. And the day before that, we were actually at home thinking, this is actually quite scary. Because I think when it started, we all thought, oh no, it's a long, long way away. Particularly on the Isle of Man, we're in our own little bubble here. This will never affect us. And very quickly, the situation sort of grew and grew. So there was that side of it. And I just remember being on the air talking about the fact that, you know, businesses were having to close and that you couldn't go out and having to announce all these things. So I'd never experienced anything like this on the radio. And I suppose that's where you draw upon the years of experience in trying to be a very calm and very reassuring voice, even though you yourself might be quite scared about what's happening and all the weirdness of not being able to see your family and friends and all of what lockdown involved. But being on the radio, we felt breakfast during that time was a real cornerstone in the fact that people were waking up and we were giving them this really important information, you know, legal information, all these things that you couldn't do. We were recapping what had been announced the day before, but we were very much trying to do it in a sort of calm, an informative manner, so that we weren't sort of scaremongering or causing any panic. So you really sort of drew on everything you could to do this in the most calm, informative way possible. But interestingly, outside of that, we tried then to keep it as light as we possibly could, because this was, as we say, a very scary time, a very difficult time for many, many people. And I remember when the first case of COVID was announced on the island, it was very late on a Thursday night. And the next morning I drove in thinking, well, this is the kind of moment we'd all dreaded when COVID actually arrived on the island. How do we deal with this? And driving up Head Road, it was like mornings by that point, because it was, I think, the 20th of March off the top of my head. And the sun had just risen. It was the most beautiful morning. And I thought, OK, actually, I know what we need to do. We need to deal with this factually and calmly and give out the information And then outside of that, we need to just play the most fantastic music we can get our hands on. And it was so easy after that, because actually it was such a beautiful day. And we said, yeah, this is scary. This is really bad news. But actually, we're here and we're going to try and... It's the old wartime spirit. Let's lift spirits as much as we can. And I think Manx Radio was brilliant at striking that balance all the way through COVID of the serious information, but actually keeping it nice and light outside of that to keep spirits lifted and everybody going. And a very warm welcome to the programme this morning. Moramai to you. It's exactly 7:30 for this Friday morning, the 20th of March.
As the first case of coronavirus is confirmed on the Isle of Man, we hear about the new 111 service introduced this morning and how testing for COVID-19 will be ramped up from today.
Around the world, more restrictions continue to be put in place, and Boris Johnson spoke yesterday of turning the tide in 12 weeks. We'll look at the scientific reasoning behind this between now and 8 o'clock.
A medical student from the Isle of Man is highlighting...
Did you have to kind of draw on all your experience from over the years to toe that line? Because presumably you can't be on the radio doing a breakfast show or any show really and be really somber. But it's difficult because everyone's so uplifting all the time on the radio, and then to have that really negative news. Did you feel a little bit of pressure to make sure you got it properly right?
Oh, definitely. You know, there's that pressure every day to make sure that we're completely accurate and that we get the information across correctly. And particularly with something like COVID, with, you know, there were the inevitable deaths on the island. You know, those very serious, very sad stories that, you know, were affecting your listeners. And in some cases, people I knew who'd lost loved ones because of COVID. So there is, without a doubt, a huge responsibility there, first of all, to report it accurately, correctly and sensitively. But I think once we've then done that, we can move on. And radio is, it's serious, it's light, it's like life. I think we should always reflect life, and life does have its ups and downs. It has its awful moments and it has its very wonderful moments. And as long as we reflect that sensitively, then I think that's absolutely what we should be doing.
And that extra pressure as well during that time, you mentioned about responsibility, and from a journalistic point of view, of there was that extra pressure of making sure we were asking the right questions. Was that something sort of going through your mind all the time as well?
Yeah, I suppose you've just got to try and put yourself in the listener's point of view, and I suppose that's what we should always do, isn't it? I think, like, what do our listeners want to know? In this case, from our politicians, from our medics, and never more so, I think, have we craved that information about what's going on and the effect that these lockdowns and the COVID virus will have on us and our family and our friends and our loved ones. So, yeah, absolutely. And you know, as you will remember here, Lewis, I'm sure it was the same for you, Siobhan, when you were working at the newspapers. We were absolutely inundated. The newsroom inbox was just so full by so many people getting in touch. Some of it, you know, quite sort of, I say small fry things, but can I go to a garden centre, for example? Can I go here? Can I do this? You know, to really, really big, very, very serious questions. So, yeah, I think it was a case of just absorbing as much of that and really testing the temperature. Man in Line came into its own during lockdown as well, because it was a great way of actually saying to the Isle of Man, what do you think? This is your opportunity to either give us a ring, text or email and let us know your thoughts. And also, just how are you feeling? You know, we often ask that. How were you feeling at that moment with this sort of this thing we'd never been through before? None of us had ever experienced anything like it. And then it was a great way of gauging the feeling on the island at those times.
I know that trying to have questions prepared for what the reader or the listener wanted to know was always interesting with those COVID briefings. I don't know if you guys were the same, but you knew that you had multiple news outlets all going to be on the same conference call. And so I was always have a list of, like, at least, I can't remember if it was like 15, I had to have 15 different options of questions, because I never knew where you didn't know till right before where you were going to be in the lineup. And then a couple times I was like last to speak, and you'd be thinking, right, okay, well, Lewis has taken that question, cross that one off. Oh, right. Oh, Jeff's taking that question. Oh, yeah. Right. And you had to keep crossing things off. And it was, always interesting to try and make sure you got all the information that was needed in that moment.
I think it was my second COVID briefing that I'd done, and I was asking the questions on behalf of Manx Radio. And there was that as well. You might have felt the responsibility of using all the time that we had, because they would occasionally come back to us at the end and say, anyone got any more questions? And you'd have to kind of, you'd be sat on the Zoom screen sticking your hand up or, you know, trying to get noticed in any way possible. And you kind of thought, actually, this has been a quick briefing. We've got news to fill. Let's ask a random question. And one thing that I kind of, it embarrasses me now, and I regretted it at the time, was I asked the then, I think, Infrastructure Minister Ray Harmer whether There was silt dredging going on in Peel Harbour, and you just think, why? But then you remember, actually, there was a desperation for other news at that time that we just needed. And, you know, there was probably people behind their computers or radios going, what's he asking that for? Who cares? You know, it's silt in Peel Harbour. He's like, well, actually, we need it.
Yeah, and this was the thing, wasn't it? And you're right, because we always get stick for every question we do or don't ask, depending on, you know, what people think. But yeah, that was the other thing, as the COVID days kind of went on and we came out of the first lockdown and then through the second and third lockdowns. And after that, the restrictions were sort of eased off. You know, there's that thing with anything, isn't there? There's a sort of fatigue, you know, in terms of we just can't keep talking about COVID. And you're absolutely right there, that we got to a point where we were like, we have to start reporting on other things, and inevitably other stories bubbled up. I think one of the first ones, we'd done nothing but COVID, and then Chris Thomas was sacked from the Council of Ministers. But, you know, and suddenly it was a non-COVID story. This was a big thing. A minister was being sacked. I think it was for not towing the line with collective responsibility. I think that was roughly what it was at the time. You can find out more at manxradio.com.
if you want to walking out of
if
the...
If you want to recap the full story. But it was something other than COVID. And I think that was also very important as the world went on and other things happened. We had as much a responsibility to still report on other news and even some of the lighter things that were going on, as we always try and do.
And you're right, we can't keep talking about COVID, and we've spoken about it for a while, as expected, I suppose. But I want to go back to something you mentioned before about that pull you had to London when you were growing up in your sort of early young adult years,
would you say, around that time.
When did you start to feel the pull back to the island, that draw? I think it must be something that's quite common with people of the Manx diaspora who have gone over there to the UK.
You do see this an awful lot. I think a lot of people leave the island for all the obvious reasons. There's a whole big world out there, the bright lights call, and I know a lot of people go away, but consequently I know lots of people who, like me, have come back to the island, and there is something hugely magnetic about this place. And as you know, I am a Peel boy through and through, and I love the island, and I'm hugely proud of my Manx heritage. I'm just going to say at this point, my mum's from Manchester, and I'm hugely proud of my Mancunian heritage as well. But sometimes people are saying, oh, well, you're only half Manx if your mum's from Manchester. I said, well, hang on a minute, my dad was born on the Isle of Man. He was born in Peel, in Charles Street, which I think is about the Manxest place on the island, so you don't get any more Peel than my dad. But yeah, there was an inevitable pullback, and I did 6 years across, and I sort of felt I'd gone as far as I could go. I always wanted to work for the BBC in some form or other. I always thought, yes, local radio would probably be it. The breakfast sofa was perhaps a bit of delusions of grandeur, chasing a bit of a rainbow there. And I had a fantastic time at Guildford. I like here, had some fantastic colleagues who really were very, very good at what they did, and also very, very passionate and really believed in that local radio ethos and serving the listener. And it was brilliant. But, you know, we can see now what's happening to local radio across the water and what has already happened to it on the commercial side of things. And even then, this was 2010, I could see the writing was on the wall, and that the early breakfast show, the luxury of having that programme, wasn't potentially going to last for too much longer. The expense of living across is so much. I was living on my own as well. I was single then. So it's that, you know, boring thing of having to pay all the bills yourself, council tax, water rates, rent, all of those things. Just that we talk about the cost of living now. It's certainly never been cheap to live in the south of England, certainly the southeast around the London area. So all those factors kind of came together. I was really worn out with the early starts, because I was getting up at 3:10 in those days for early breakfast. So 5 o'clock actually is a bit of a dream in respect. It's never easy, but it's easier than that, than 3:10. And it got to a point where I was thinking, oh, yeah, maybe I've kind of done all I can here. I realised as well, if you really want to be successful and really make it to the sort of dizzy heights of the likes of the breakfast sofa, you need to push yourself. You need, there's so many people wanting to do that. You need to somehow stand out. And I'm not very good at pushing myself forward at all. So all of that combined, I thought, should I go back to the island for a bit and just see how I go? And they were great at Guildford, at BBC, sorry, because they kept my job open. And said, why aren't you going to have like 3 months, go home for the summer, see how you feel, and then you can come back. We'll keep the job open, which was amazing. I came back the day before Tynwald Day. Day after Tynwald Day, I was like, I'm not going back to England. Yeah. I am here. The weather was glorious. I was sat in my parents' garden, and I realised very quickly, as I had when I moved away, coming back here, life on a daily basis generally is very easy in the respect that if you want to nip around to see a mate, you can do so. If they're in Peel, it's going to take you 5 minutes maximum. If you want to go somewhere in London, you've got to build in time for the motorway. If it's delayed, if there's been something going on, if there's train delays or train strikes or whatever it might be, on a practical level, life here is so much easier than it is. And that was just very nice.
I don't know if you agree with this, Lewis. We're both grinning, like nodding along with you, but I totally feel that 100%. I lived in Manchester before I moved over, and I would drop my partner to work and it'd be like 20 minutes like max, but then you'd hit all the traffic and all this. So a round trip dropping her to work and back was like an hour of my day, and I hated the traffic and I hated all of it. And then now I'm like, I'm not quite there where I think that, you know, going up north takes forever. I actually think, well, no, it's like 15 minutes to go pretty much anywhere on the Isle of Man. But definitely that different pace of life, it just is really obvious when you move over.
And this is what brought us over as well, was my partner working 2 days in fact in Hull, a day in Doncaster, and a day in Market Raisin, and another in Scunthorpe some weeks. So it would be constantly going across the Humber Bridge and here, there and everywhere, and just it was tiring, it was really draining, and you could see that. And that was why when the job came up over here for working full time, which is a rarity at like a dental practice where she works, it's a rarity across the water, but it's the kind of the valuable thing that the Isle of Man can offer. I just wanted to go back as well. You mentioned your dad being Manx through and through, growing up on Charles Street. What was that like when you told him you had a job at Manx Radio?
Oh, they were delighted. You know, they've always been so supportive. I mean, bless them, my mum and my dad. You know, they listen every morning, come what may. I think 7:25, the radio goes on after they've made their early morning brew, and they're great. And they've always been massively, massively supportive. Because I suppose it was a bit of a different career choice. My dad and both my brothers were and are plumbers. My dad's retired now, but both my brothers still work in plumbing. And I suppose there was a bit of an expectation maybe that I might go into... I think they knew from a young age
Maybe, hold on, let's just reverse back to you saying you were doing sports bulletins and you were at about six.
Actually,
I don't think they thought you were going to go into plumbing.
Yeah, I think at that point they're probably like, yeah, do you know what? This boy might be a bit more sort of creative and arty than the rest of the Hartley family. And they were great, you know, as I say, they really encouraged and supported. When I used to come up here on those Friday nights, my mother would always make, you know, the pack of sandwiches to bring up and all of that. You know, they have been great, and hopefully they're proud of what I've done.
On the Hartley name there, we need to jump to something I found out the other day. So when you were across, did you always go by your surname?
Now there's a good question.
This is something I don't know.
Oh, here we go. I found this
bit of skeet for you.
I put that away in the back of my mind to bring
this
up.
You never tell a journalist anything, because even though you think, oh, they've not really remembered that, they do. It always goes there. Yeah, so I've never been keen on the name Hartley. It's just one of those things which I, for some reason, never liked it. So when I went away and when I started at Guildford, I said to my boss there, could I be known on air by a different surname? Because I'd love the name Ben, and changing your first name would be really weird, I think, wouldn't it? And they said, yeah, you can be known as whatever you want. And I was like, right, I'm going to change my surname. So I thought, what can I be? And I looked at various things. I was thinking Ben Ramsey, maybe, which has a nice Manx connection and also a neighbours connection. Ben Scully. Ben Scully, another neighbours link. And then somehow settled on Kerrigan. I think there was a character in Brookside many moons ago called something Kerrigan, and I've always liked that name. So yes, I have to admit, at Guildford, I was known as Ben Kerrigan. And even though, because I still see my friends from Guildford, there's a sort of close gang of us who worked together years ago and we've all sort of gone in different directions, but we still meet up every year and are still great friends, and they still know me as BK, because they know my name's not, but because I was always known on air as Ben Kerrigan, I was never ever called anything else, so they think it's weird when they hear me being referred to as Ben Hartley.
Amazing.
That's fantastic. I never knew that.
I know. Well, it was Howard actually mentioned how he'd been driving down the motorway one day and he heard you come on to do like a travel report. And he thought, that's not, who's this? This is Ben Hartley. Like, he knew the voice.
But why are they saying Kerrigan?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, sneaky,
it's a fraud.
Sneaky little showbiz name change, stage name.
So one other thing I really want to talk to you about is that you have this incredible knowledge of music. And I think if you get into the radio, you have to love music in some form. And we could all probably wax poetic about different things for ages. But you have this uncanny thing, really, of if I gave you a year and a month, you could probably tell me what was number one. So was that like an obsession at the time? Is that just something that you still...
Hang on, I think
still...
we need to test this.
I know, I want to... Right, should we test
that's
it?
That's what I was worried was coming on there. Maybe we could do that. That could be the podcast extra.
Yeah, well, sure. We'll come back to
we
that.
We did have a whole conversation not that long ago where I gave you my birthday and you he was able to work it out.
It took a while though,
Because, Michael Jackson, You Are Not Alone. And that song had just gone off my radar. But I've always had this slightly photographic sort of mind when I used to do stage stuff like plays and pantos and stuff years ago. I could learn the lines and I could see them on the page. It was really weird. I could see them in the paragraphs and the stage direction. So I've always had that ability, maybe less so as I've got older. But yeah, I've all trivia. I love trivia. Facts and figures about when was that song in the charts? Mm. What position did it get to? And when I was about 15, I got my first copy of the Guinness Book of British Hit Singles. And I just consumed the whole thing. I just read it from cover to cover. And I have this ability to just look at a song and think, oh, that's what year it was out. And somehow remember it. Sadly, I can remember nothing useful that will make me lots of money. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Well, but it's the same with soaps and characters and storylines and what year was, JR shot in Dallas? What year was that the cliffhanger? And it's this useless
what year was it then? Come on.
1980.
And we'll fact check that.
If I said to you, what was number one towards the end of July 1997, you would, of course, say...
Yeah, Puff Daddy, I'll Be Missing You with Faith
you'd be
Evans.
Bang on.
Yeah, which would be the song when number one when you were born.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yes. He even remembers that, like, just by us giving our birthdays again, he's now got it in there and he'll always know.
I will never forget now we've had that Michael Jackson conversation. That is there. So, yeah, it's just this strange ability, but I love trivia. Absolutely love it.
So every morning you pick a Ben's banger for the breakfast show. What goes into the logic for picking those songs? And is it something where you only recently played a fairly new one, but usually it's a bit of a throwback. So how do you go about picking them?
They were great, actually, the management here when we started breakfast. I said, can we do something like a Ben's banger slot where, go into the old musical man bag, as we call it, and just the ethos of it, I guess, is you want it to be one of those songs where people think, oh crikey, I've not heard this for years, and really crank the radio up. So you always want it to be upbeat, particularly that time of the morning. You want big upbeat songs, 10 to 9, people are still on the move, maybe still getting going, that kind of thing. So throughout the week, even though it's my choice, I always still try and do a spread of different eras. It's always 80s on a Monday and 90s old school on a Friday. But between that, I try and sort of maybe do one from the 70s, maybe one from the noughties. We do occasionally do a more current one. We got very excited a couple of weeks ago when we did a song that was actually in the charts, the new Years and Years song. So there's no sort of great logic. It's just finding a spread of genres and eras across the week. And as long as it's just one of those tunes that's the kind of the benchmark. Is it a tune where you're going to go, yes, turn the radio up loud?
And it shows how differently my brain works, because the amount of times that I sit there puzzling over it when you're asking me those questions, and I have no idea. But in Spiral Carpets, like we had this morning, that was based on a conversation I suppose we had in a pub in Peel about 9 months ago. You remembered it.
It resonated, you see. And I thought, I must do that sometime when you're on co-presenting the show, because it's always nice. Like, I know the certain bands Sean loves, so if we can chuck those in every now and again, and we might do some Paramore for you at some. That's on the list. That's definitely
I feel like
on the
anything
list.
I ever do for this radio now, people should just be able to like take a shot if the word Paramore comes up, because everyone else mentions
Siobhan
it
bingo.
Now.
Yeah,
Siobhan bingo.
Definitely.
Number
definitely.
One is Paramore. So if we could sort of then run through a little bit of your day then. Mm. So we obviously followed you around the breakfast show a couple of weeks ago. Sean was in and also sort of got paparazzied while we were taking photos and things. But how does your day... What does it look like? So getting up, what time do you get up every day?
Yeah, it is quite early, no doubt about it. The alarm is set either 4 o'clock or 4:15, depending on how much I can get done the day before. So yeah, I mean, it is excruciating when the alarm goes off. I actually normally I wake up just before the alarm. It's quite rare to actually sleep through to that awful noise. So so it's kind of trying to get yourself out of bed, get sorted, get a bit of breakfast in the car, and then into the radio station normally around about 5 o'clock, and that gives you about an hour or so just to get all the final bits of preparation done for the programme. So, for example, at the moment, the way the weather has been recently, it's very much a case of check the social media feeds from the police, the DOI, to see if the mountain road has been shut or whatever has been going on. You know, check the Steam Packet website to see where the latest is in terms of the sailings. all that kind of thing, all the other bits and pieces of prep, and then up we go about 10 to 6 to get on air for 6 o'clock.
Oh, God. And I think it's bad when I'm on a weekend shift and I have to be in the station for 6. And it's similar. My alarm will go off at like... See, I'm couldn't find it than you, but I'm only in Douglas as well. That's the key thing. You're coming in from Peel.
We have the 20-minute drive in from Peel, which can be good because actually you can talk about that. If it's been a bad weather day, you can talk about what the conditions were like on the main road. Yeah. So there is an advantage. But yeah, you being in Douglas is definitely a good thing at that time of the morning.
Oh, I can push it. I can get up at about 20 to 6 and still be here on time. If I can have the car, that's the thing.
Yeah, I'm envious.
But I mean, I always find as well, like on a... So Friday going into that weekend shift, doesn't matter what shift I've been on or whether it's that I'm on earlies with you on breakfast for the week, that night before where I'm switching back into the early shift, I can have a really unsettled night. I'll wake up a lot. It's almost as if I'm like, have I set my alarm? Like, and I know I have. I've never not set it. I've never missed it. But do you have that, I suppose, Sunday night going into Monday morning? Do you have a bit of, oh God, what if I sleep for my alarm?
No, thankfully, not too much. I think because we do this sort of day in, day out, you know, 5 days a week, all year round, actually, you do get into the routine of not being worried. I know exactly what you mean. It's like when you set the alarm to get up early when you're going away, you don't sleep the night before. But I think when you do it regularly, actually that is one thing that you do kind of get over, that kind of waking up every so often to check the time and so forth. I think there's just an inbuilt clock. And I'm going to touch wood now because this is, shall I say this? Yeah, what the heck? This is dangerous. But I've never overslept. Never. It hasn't happened. So,
yet. Oh,
I know I'm tempting fate here. Absolutely, by saying this. But yeah, so I always sort of feel there's that inbuilt clock. So actually, I do sleep reasonably well. That the problem is going up to bed at a reasonable time the night before. That actually is more difficult than getting up early doors. So yeah, trying to get up the stairs at a reasonable time. I think I have got vaguely better at it, but I could definitely do a lot better than I do.
Yeah, it was hard when there's like, I always think when there's sort of TV moments happening. Like Chanel recently, like, so she loves The Traitors, and obviously when Traitors was on recently, she was like, but she's like pretty much on earlies all the time, and she was like, oh God, I'll have to go and watch it in bed, but I'm falling asleep watching it. It's only on at like 9 o'clock, but that's actually a really late night if you're getting up at like 5-6 o'clock the next day, which is what we're doing, and you, well, even earlier, and then you're up even earlier than that.
That's it. Friday night when I don't have to be up the next morning, that's when I absolutely crash. I'm normally asleep by about 8:30 if we're on the settee and the pizza has been consumed. That's me. I'm done. But yeah, for example, like we've been watching Bridgerton, the new series just lately, and Gareth will say when we get to the end of one episode, oh, can we put another one on? And I'm like, no, they're an hour long and it's 9 o'clock. I really need to be getting up to bed. So
oh,
yeah,
no.
It does curtail things somewhat. Yeah. But I try and have a little snooze in the afternoon actually to try and sort of offset the fact that I really should get more sleep at night. So if I can, it's not always easy sleeping in the daytime because there's things going on outside, you know, drills or whatever it might be, you know, work going on around the house and the everyday sort of life passing by. But I try and get a little bit of a snooze if I can in the day. That definitely helps.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do a day nap. I just can't do it. Like, unless I'm exhausted.
Some people can't. I think Sian completely powers through. She never has a nap in the daytime, which is incredible.
Right, let's discuss Sian. So Sian is in equally as early with you. Well, not
slightly after. Just slightly after.
I was going to say. Yeah. Ben's like, excuse me.
I'm claiming the crown of being first
in. I'm in an hour earlier. Yeah. No, so Sian's in every morning at 6, basically, because obviously she's kind of your little sort of co-presenter on the breakfast show still.
Like,
she's
absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
Sian is voice of the news.
Yeah, vital sort of part of the show. Obviously, she sort of prepares and reads the news and very often will join in giving us some sort of expert analysis, shall we say, and insight into the various stories, particularly the political stories, of which there have been a lot already this year. So Sian is great to kind of provide that punditry because she just knows off the top of her head everything that's gone on and has gone on over the years, an encyclopedic knowledge.
So to say, that is you for music. And Sian, I'll be like, when did Timwell discuss this random act, and I'll give a vague name, not even the correct bill title, and she'll be like, oh yeah, that was June 2019, and then this, that, and the other. I'm like, what?
Yeah, the former chief minister at the time said this in 7 years
ago.
She's
amazing.
And very often, you know, when we're talking about stories and happenings in the morning, I'll sort of just check with Sian if I sort of say it like this. Is that correct? If I sort of talk about that there and say that, is that right? Yeah. And she's like, yeah, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. Or, oh no, maybe just not quite that bit. You know, she keeps me well on track.
Oh, she's
definitely.
Brilliant. Yeah, but amazing. No, all I was going to say about Sian is that she finishes her shift, and I know she doesn't go for a nap, because next thing, you see her powering the pavement, stomping around. She goes for a walk. You see her walk all the way along the prom, up Marine Drive, everywhere. She's out and about as soon as... And I'm like, are you not going to go and lie on the couch for an hour, Sian?
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's also very interesting how different people do... It's also amazing how different people do these things differently. I couldn't power through. I can do a day or two without the afternoon nap, but if I did a whole week of that, I'd be absolutely wrecked by the end of it. So, yeah, more sleep is the constant wish in life. Yeah.
That's it. And the days when you have running club, he loves his running club. If you're listening, he loves you. But some days, Ben will be like, oh, I've got to do a run tonight.
Well, I turn up. That's what I always say with the running club in the west of the island. This great little group that we have in Peel, actually, that they're brilliant. And they drag me round Mondays and Wednesdays. Yeah, I turn up. I moan the whole way around. I'm always at the back of the pack. But it's really good, actually. And then sort of getting out there and exercising, I think, is great anyway. But I think particularly when you do the early shifts, it sort of helps, I think, with the stamina for that. And it's a great social thing as well. And in the summer, we sort of get out and about, say, into the sort of countryside or up Peel Hill or down the river or wherever it might be. And it's great. Once I'm there and once I've done it, it's great. Beforehand, I'm never as grumpy in the week as I am before running. But when I've done it and I head back down the hill home, I'm never happier.
Well, then you just chuffle yourself.
Well, listen, I'm like, because I was...
I did a run.
I am not athletic at all. I was the least athletic person at school when it came to sport. I was absolutely back of the pack. So the fact that I managed to drag myself out and haul myself around a couple of times a week, I still think, is a bit of a miracle.
And one last thing, we've talked as well at length about the listener and how they're key in all of this, and how obviously we have our regular listeners, the names that we see pop up time and again. Shout out to Greber and Uncle Roy, family connection there for me.
Absolutely.
Who message breakfast every day. But you have these dedicated listeners, and they will comment on stories and this, that, and the other. But also, you do run competitions in breakfast as well. And I'm bringing this up largely so we can discuss another person we love, the voice of those competitions, Will King.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Will started here on Schoolwork Experience probably the best part of 10 years ago now, 8-9 years ago, I think it was. Has done loads here at Manx Radio. Was absolutely fantastic. He's just a brilliant bloke as well. We all love him, don't we? And he's now doing his thing in London, working at the BBC. And he's doing really great things, and will go on to do even greater things, no doubt about that. And we are incredibly proud of him, no doubt about it. Yeah. He's doing great stuff.
But he's the voice of the Mystery Motorist.
That's it, which we do every morning just after 8:30. So, yeah, it's fun. The competitions and the quizzes. I think people really like a quiz. I think we all, or most of us, like a quiz, don't we? So we do the early morning music mystery, 6:15. That's just a bit of knockabout where you've got to try and work out the song and the band from the rather daft clue that I give each morning, a sort of like crossword type clue. And then the Mystery Motorist at 8:30, where you've just got to work out the famous voice. It's a mystery voice competition, effectively, but in the Manx Radio Motor, who's behind the wheel? Ellen Van In Fuels have been the sponsor for some time now and continue to be, and it's 50 quid's worth of road fuel every week from EVF, which I have to say, it's not a bad price.
It's not a bad price. Yeah. And what I always love as well, when you're presenting anything, I notice this on Live Lounge, sometimes you'll be speaking to the listener and you won't be getting anything back, and then you'll go, right, competition time now, and they flood in. So, I mean, what's that like as well? Because breakfast is actually the interesting one, because you do get comment in on stories. So there is kind of a constant flow of conversation there. But also, yeah, do you notice that pickup when the competition rolls around?
Most definitely. And some more, it can really vary. And some mornings we're talking about a particular story, whatever it may be, and you might think, oh, yeah, this is bound to get a lot of comments. It doesn't.
Yeah.
And then very often a more sort of, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill story that you think is fairly innocuous actually sparks an enormous amount of comment. You never, and that's what I love about it, you never know what is going to hit the mark. With the competitions, with the quiz, yeah, they do really well each morning. First and foremost, it's a great prize. And it's lovely when people sort of play along. We love it when people get in touch. And some mornings on the Mystery Motorist particularly, we can be inundated with texts and emails, which is great. You know, it's all part of it, because, you know, the listener absolutely is as much a part of the show as we are. You know, we're very much all in it together, we like to feel. So it's brilliant when there are those moments where they get in touch in their droves at some mornings.
In their droves. And it takes pressure off now, that competition, because I remember the competition we had a year or so before the schedule change, we had to guess the song, didn't we? And then you'd look to the newsreader in the studio to say what the song is before the song, before you hit go. And some mornings I was like, I don't know what it is.
And then I used to
Ben, help.
I used to love seeing like the fear in your eyes when you're like, I've no idea. I've got her.
I've got her again.
This is
and
good.
Then the days where I got to very like kind of cockily, be like, actually, it's Blondie. And I would know it or something.
A question I want to ask as well is obviously, you've been doing this for however many years now, probably the majority of your life at Manx Radio, would it be fair to say at this point? What has the station meant to you over that time and how do you think it defines who you are now?
I love Manx Radio and, as has I think been demonstrated, have loved it for a long, long time because, you know, we're 60 years old, the oldest commercial station in Britain, and I think this station has such a rich history. Yes, we have our critics and yes, we have our naysayers, but actually there's a huge listener loyalty to Manx Radio because I think, as we've proven, in times of crisis, we are here and even in the good times, just providing whatever information it may be. And yeah, I think, you know, my friends have always joked if you cut me open, you'd see Manx Radio written through me like a stick of rock because here I am nearly 30 years on since I first came here on school work experience. I love radio as a medium. I love local radio, whether, as I say, it be here or across or wherever. I think it's so important, that local media, and long may it continue. And it's just great to be involved in a station on my own doorstep that I've loved for many, many years.
You've been listening to A Day in the Life of Ben Hartley. Thank you so much for listening if you got this far. And if you have a job that you think is particularly interesting and that I could do a day in the life of with you, then drop me an email, Siobhan Fletcher at manxradio.com, and I'll be sure to get back to you.